Shalom Aleichem, my name is Rabbi Adam Dubin. Our learning this evening, once again, is for Achinuch Kol Bnei Yisrael, all of our Jewish brothers and sisters, with thinking especially about those engaged in the Melchama in Eretz Yisrael. With that in mind, we'll begin with the Perek of Tehillim. This is Kuf Chaf Aleph 121. Shir Lama'alo Sisa Ezrim Yisrael. Adonai Shemrech, Adonai Selcha, Yad Yimnecho, Yomam HaMashiach Shalei Yakeko, V'yerech B'laylo, Adonai Yishmorecha Mikor Ra Yishmorech Nafshecho, Adonai Yishmorech Seitzuchecha Mitavidullah. Once again, may HaKadosh Baruch Hu see fit to grant a Yeshua to those who need it, a refuah to those who need it. Everyone should be granted all the things that they need, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should see fit once again to end not just the Melchama that's going on in Eretz Yisrael, but really to end all the suffering all around the world. Mr. Shem, bring Mashiach Tzidkenu as well. If you're interested in sponsoring, reach out to 917-626-8306 or visit shareenjoyment.com. Additionally, all of my learning is a Zecher Nishmas, Rabbi Mori, Moshe David, Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac, Rabbi Moshe David Tendler, Zecher Tanakh Levracha. Of course, I guess I wish everyone a good Moed. I hope everyone had a good couple Sedarim, that Pesach has begun well. As you can see, if you're looking at live or a recording that has the background, I'm not at home, so I'm a little bit out of place. I haven't had quite as much time to prepare as I typically would, but I'm going to see you still going through a midrash here. We're going to be looking at the midrash in Shir Hashirim. There's, as we know, a common custom, not universal, but a common custom that Chazal say to say Shir Hashirim on Shabbos Chol HaMoed Pesach. Of course, if there is no Shabbos Chol HaMoed, then it's the last day of Yontif. So, as we know, Shir Hashirim was written by Shlomo HaMelech, and it's an allegory. It's understood to be an allegory, liturgical poem, related to the relationship between the Bnei Yisrael and the Kadosh Baruch Hu, a loving relationship between the Bnei Yisrael and Hashem. And it chronicles, so to speak, that relationship, the moment of our nationhood that we became a Jewish people as a nation through the time of Mashiach Tzidkenu. So this is one of the reasons why it's connected to Pesach, why we read it on Pesach, is because when we Pesach is the time where we commemorate the being let out of Mitzrayim, let out of Egypt, as we know, as we relive it during the Sedarim. And we really become a nation unto ourselves. Yes, we were a nation apart, people apart, even in Mitzrayim, as we know. But really, it's Pesach that we become a nation of our own. So the time of becoming a nation, the time of Mashiach. We also think about the coming of Mashiach on Pesach, as well as every other time, every other day. But specifically, Pesach is connected to our final redemption, the entire idea. Pesach is about Geula, redemption. So when we think about the final Geula of Mashiach Tzidkenu coming, that of course is referenced in Shir Hashirim as well. So that's the basic connection between Shir Hashirim and Pesach. We're going to delve into the Shir Hashirim. We're going to look here's Perek Dalet Pasuk Aleph. No, not quite at the beginning, but the pasuk begins. Hinach yafa ra'isi, hinach yafa inayich, yonam mevar. So behold, you are fair, my beloved. Behold, you are fair. Your eyes are like doves from within your kerchief. Your hair is like a flock of goats that is streamed from Hargilah, Mount of Gilad. Now, Rashi has a lot to say here, and as I think I mentioned previously, poetry is not my forte. To just take a look at one of the Rashi, because it connects to the midrash we're going to go into, and the Sarayich is that your kerchief, like your hair, is like a flock of goats. So the Rashi says that this praise is a paradigm of the praise of a woman who's beloved by her chasen, by her husband to be, Within your kerchief, your hair is beautiful and glistens with brilliance and whiteness, like the hair of white ghosts descending from the mountains, whose hair gleams in the distance. And in this allegorical sense, it's said of the Kehillah, B'nai Yisrael, that within your camps and your tents, even the empty ones among you are as dear to me as Yaakov and his sons, who streamed down to descend from Har Gilad when love and overtook them. That's the first explanation, Rashi. Then Rashi offers another explanation, says that as those who mobilized against Midian beyond the Yarden, beyond the Jordan, which is the land of Gilad, and this language is found again in our Midrash Shir Hashir. So now take a quick look at the Midrash. It's kind of long. I don't know that we'll get through the entire Midrash here, but Midrash begins. Rabbi Yitzchak Psach Kriya Nechamas Midian. So Rabbi Yitzchak interprets the Psukim with regard to the Nechamas Midian, the war with Midian, that the campaign with Pinchas at the helm was a war of vengeance against Midian for sending their daughters to seduce the men of Bnei Yisrael to immorality. Again, we think looking ahead in the Chumash, this is going to be in Parshas Balak, at the end of Parshas Balak and the beginning of Parshas Pinchas. So to immorality, to idol worship of Avodah Zarah, shortly before we came into Eretz Yisrael. And so a Nevera for which many of the Bnei Yisrael died. This again, the mention is in Parshas Pinchas, and previous Parshas Balak. We see this in the Sefer Bamidbar, it's Perek Chaf Hei, in that area. Okay, the Midrash continues. So your hair is like a flock of goats. That the flock, that is the troops that went to fight the war of Midian, went only in the merit of Moshe and Pinchas. That the pasuk connects the multitude of troops as your hair, comparing the flock of goats as follows the lead of a shepherd, and of a goat that leads the flock. So also the Bnei Yisrael go out to battle, confident in their merit of their shepherd, who of course is Moshe Rabbeinu, and their general, who was Pinchas. And this is Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. So halahu dichzid vayishlach Moshe elif lamata letzava ve'es Pinchas. So therefore it says, Moshe sent them 1,000 from each shevet, from each tribe, for the legion, and them and Pinchas. This is from Sefer Bamidbar, Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Vav. That the statement that Moshe sent them indicates that the success of their campaign depended on the merit of Moshe Rabbeinu. Likewise, the phrase "them and Pinchas" indicates that the success of the troops was them was dependent on the merit of Pinchas. For otherwise, the word "them" could be seen as superfluous, and we know that Hashem doesn't have extra words in the Torah. So, similar idea when it comes to the rest of Tanakh as well. There's no extra words. Okay, Midrash continues. Shegalshu meher Gilad, the streaming down from the mountain of Gilad. Har shegalsh shegalashtin ametocho. So the phrase Shigalashu from Har Gilad means the mountain on account of which you were plucked. See the Ifakol for understanding on that. The Ifakol is one of the Mefarshim on Midrash Shir Hashir. Not all the Mefarshim are the same. Back in Midrash, on account of the mountain for which you were plucked, I made a mound, a gal, and testimony aid to the nations of the world. Ezezu, what is this referring to? Zo milchamas Midian. This is referring to the war with Midian. That the Midian is called a mountain because the Bnei Yisrael destroyed it and made it into a desolate mountain. So Kadosh Baruch Hu thereby made it to a standing testimony for the nations of the Bnei Yisrael to the revenge against their enemies. So the pasuk is also understood to mean that your hair is like a flock of goats when you were plucked from the mountains that served as a mound and a testimony, as aiders to again the other umos oilo. Midrash continues, Hakatsubos, that your teeth are like a flock well counted. Uma agalsha egashden. What's pluck and what plucking were you plucked because of? Shinaich be'eder haktsuvos, that the pasuk is stating your teeth are like a flock that's well counted. So milik tzuvin shneimaser elef benedavo shneimaser elef b'masira. This alludes to the fixed things, namely the fixed number of the 12,000 soldiers referred to with the teeth, because they devour their enemies, so to speak. The 12,000 soldiers who came forward voluntarily, the 12,000 who were delivered by force. That the pasuk says in the Sefer Midbar, Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Gimel Pasuk Dalet, that Moshe spoke to the Bnei Yisrael, saying, "Arm your men among yourselves, 1,000 from a shevet, 1,000 from a shevet." So, according to the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, the double expression of 1,000 for a shevet means that 2,000 soldiers were to be enlisted per each shevet from each tribe, for a total of 24,000. However, there's only 1,000 per shevet came forward voluntarily. The others, having heard of Moshe Rabbeinu's Misa was going to be contingent upon the war with Midian, refused to enlist. They had to be taken by force. They didn't want Moshe Rabbeinu to die. So both groups were plucked, so to speak, away, sent off to battle. The Midrash continues, Shenemar v'imasru me'alfei Yisrael elav l'mata. As it says, so there were delivered from thousands of Bnei Yisrael, 1,000 from each shevet, 12,000 armed from the legion, as we just mentioned. Again, Perek Lamed Aleph Pasuk Hey in Sefer Bamidbar. Since this pasuk mentioned only 12,000 as opposed to the 24,000, the Midrash is led to say that 12,000 of them were delivered, meaning that they were enlisted against their will. As we just mentioned, so the Midrash applies this expression of a flock well counted to the two divisions of the soldiers, those that were volunteers and those that were enlisted and conscripted, if you will, enrolled in forcibly, 12,000 per division. Each of these was enlisted separately, like two flocks of sheep that were counted separately. And the Midrash continues, Amar Rabbi Chanina bar Yitzchak, b'shnei maser elef halchu. That Rabbi Chanina bar Yitzchak said, with only 12,000 did they go to battle in Midian. So the other 12,000, however, didn't actually go to the battlefield, but remained in the camp to guard the army equipment. That's based on the Mahartzu that we saw in that you see in Midrash Rabbah, there. Now the Eitz Yosef adds that the 12,000 who were enlisted by force, again, who were conscripted, were those who were sent to the battlefield. However, there were enough volunteers to guard the equipment, as Moshe Rabbeinu's Misa was contingent only upon the actual battle and not upon the guarding of the equipment. The Midrash continues. Shalom min rachsam, we have come upon the washing. Rabbi Huna Amar, Rabbi Huna said, Shalom hikdim echad mehen tefillin shel rosh. This suggests that none of them put on tefillin on the head or on the arm, and that is, they were careful to observe even minor halachas, as putting on tefillin of the arm before putting on the head. As we know that when we wrap tefillin, we put it on the arm first and then the head, and then finish wrapping around the hand. For had one of them put the tefillin of the head before the filling of the arm, lo hayi Moshe mishabchun, lo hayu olim misham l'shalom, that Moshe would not have praised them, nor would they have ascended from there in peace. That in the merit of properly performing the mitzvah of tefillin, which involves the arm and the head, the words v'tarav zoreya es kidkod, he tears off the arm and even the head. This is a pasuk of Sefer Tzvarim, Perek Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Chav, and of the mighty warriors of the Shevet Gad, who are fulfilled in the soldiers of the Bnei Yisrael. Moreover, the pasuk mentions that that the arm goes before the head, alluding to the specific obligation of putting on the tefillin of the arm first. That the soldier's success in battle is contingent upon being meticulous and fulfilling even this kind of a mitzvah. Putting tefillin on can be explained based on that which the Gemara Maseches Brachos Daf Vav Aleph teaches, that when the Bnei Yisrael wore tefillin on their heads, they inspire fear in the hearts of their enemies. It's visible. Therefore, in order to be victorious in battle, the Bnei Yisrael must be particular to fulfill this mitzvah properly. And this is alluded to in a phrase which have come upon them from the washing. They came up from the battlefield in peace, and the merit of their being clean from, so to speak, from any trace of aveira. That's based off, again, the Yifa Kol. And the Midrash continues in this section. You say then that they were exceedingly righteous, performing the mitzvahs meticulously. They did them properly. The Midrash cites the merit of putting on tefillin properly, first on the arm and then on the head. What's the significance of this halachic protocol? So the Yaros Dvash, volume 2, explains that the tefillin shall yeah, the arm tefillin remind us to consecrate our actions to the executed primarily by the arms and by the hands, do them properly for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's avodah, the avodah to Hashem, whereas the head tefillin remind us to dedicate our intellect to the same purpose. Again, our hands are doing the action, but our minds guide our actions. Though practical observance of the theoretical knowledge are both important, we must never lose sight of the fact that the goal is always to use the head to work the hand, so to speak. And that theory without practice is like a seed that hasn't sprouted yet. To drive home this basic principle, the halacha requires that before we put on the tefillin shel rosh, he must ground himself in the world of action using tefillin shel yad. The Kesser Shabbos on our pasuk anchors this idea in a Mishnaic maxim. Says anyone whose good deeds exceed his wisdom will endure. But anyone whose wisdom exceeds his good deeds, his wisdom will not endure. This is from Pirkei Avos, Perek Gimel, Mishnah Tes. Good deeds, as defined by the Torah, have a value even where then they are not backed up by a full understanding of their purpose and their meaning. But the deep understanding that remains practically sterile has no value and will not endure. Just think about the fact, again, we just had the Pesach Seder, we ate matzah. The big comes to mind that we want to have the proper kavanah, the proper intention when doing all mitzvahs. But if somebody ends up to eat matzah but doesn't have in mind that he's going to fulfill the mitzvah of achilas matzah on the Pesach Seder, does he fulfill the mitzvah of achilas matzah? And the long story short that the Gemara in Maseches Psachim goes through says that yes, the person ends up to fulfill his mitzvah of achilas matzah even if his mind isn't there. The actual action, the physical action, is enough to say, oh, he did it, even if he didn't realize what he was doing was enough to fulfill the mitzvah. Same idea, that the physical action of performing the mitzvah, of doing the deed, whatever the action might be, is going to show that more than the theoretical knowledge of it. Knowing something isn't the same as doing something. You know, the ideal is to learn something in order to do something. You want to be able to really make the action work. Just knowing the knowledge isn't enough to really make the action happen. Again, if you don't make the action, then it's not going to stay to fruition. Basic idea as well. Commonly understood that if somebody, again, in any context, is taking notes when listening to a shiur, listening to a drasha, listening to a lecture of any sort, then he or she's going to remember better because he physically took notes. A person who goes ahead and goes through actions of something that he learned or she learned is going to then remember it better than someone who just heard it, even someone who wrote it down. There's also apparently a difference between writing down versus typing when you're taking notes as well. Physical action of writing is supposed to make it easier to remember as well. The idea, again, the idea of physical action is more more lasting than theoretical knowledge. Okay, we'll continue in this idea that the idea points further is especially hard to apply in times of a war when the struggle for survival often limits our ability to perform mice and type good deeds. Yet even in these circumstances, the B'nai Yisrael, our troops in war against Midian, to their external credit, managed to outshine their wisdom with their abundance of mice and tovim, or good deeds. In a somewhat different approach, the Keser Shabbos pot suggests that the tefillin shel yad, the arm tefillin placed next to the heart, are meant to sanctify our inner desires, or as we recite daily when we do the mitzvah of tefillin, which obviously we don't do on Pesach. It's to subjugate our desires and the thoughts to our hearts and to avodas this Hashem. So accordingly, the requirement to start with the tefillin shel yad, the arm tefillin, teaches us that we must make the task of purifying our hearts our first priority. Not doing so carries a great risk, for then even if the wisdom and knowledge symbolized by the tefillin shel rosh is profound and Torah true, then chas v'shalom, he could end up to commit averas. The Keser Shabbos cites an ethical work cite called Sefer Hamidos, which illustrates this matter with an analogy. The human heart is like a roll of parchment intended for writing the Torah scroll. In order for the parchment to be valid, it must be specially treated to soften the writing surface and make it impervious to erasure, forgery. In a similar way, the heart is not capable of receiving the impressions of true wisdom until it is, quote unquote, treated with the kedusha and tahara, so we'll say with holiness and purity, and softened by the process of refining our character traits or our positive midos. Otherwise, this unprimed heart will corrupt chas v'shalom very nature or wisdom, and will be corrupted by it, resulting in a forgery, so to speak, of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's Torah truth. So, in times of war, it's especially difficult to preserve this softness and again, a tahara of the heart. Seasoned warriors, hardened by battle and bloodshed, are notoriously prone to losing their human refinement and engaging in acts of ruthlessness and depravity. The Jewish warriors in Midian, however, were an exception, having never failed to lay their tefillin in the wrong order. They were always sensitive to the importance of keeping their hearts soft and pliant, and forever receptive to being shaped and sanctified by the force of Kadosh Baruch Hu's halachas. The Midrash continues that for quite a bit, but it's already late, and I think it's a good idea to just end with this thought that here we are again in the midst of our brothers and sisters in Eretz Yisrael are currently in the midst of this terrible Muhammad that has been for several months now, about 6 months of this Milchama since it began. And yet the stories that I hear, the things that I see of our brethren, our soldiers, the soldiers of the IDF in this case, doing everything they can, going above and beyond to be like an Or LaGoyim, following their rules of engagement are, but to try to not be hardened by battle. One of my friends, old friend from Yeshiva, made Aliyah many years ago, signed up. He aged out of being required to go in for Milu'im, but he went, and every so often I see him posting the glory of what it means to be a Jew, as he is in different aspects of the what's going on in Gaza, that area. Yeah, he's proudly smiling while he's putting on tefillin, taking pictures of him with all of his other soldiers while they're davening, and they're the geschmack they're feeling outside in a war zone. But it's remembering what's important to do in that time. And again, it's a connection as well to what's a Pesach in our time that we're in right now. We are striving towards the Geula, as and what we need to do physically to help ourselves in our time, are helping our soldiers, the soldiers in Israel right now in the IDF, our learning, our davening, it's all for that goal. The ultimate goal, of course, of bringing Mashiach Sukenu, so that we can then serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the best way possible with the building of Bayis Shlishi, and Mashiach Sukenu. I mean, I wish everyone a good, they should have a good Moed, good Yontif, good Shabbos, Tzeiger Vesh.